T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Previous caller had mentioned it, so I'll pivot and call audible and go with Lou Piniella. Every time that he lost his mind, watching him throw his hat, throw bats, kick dirt on umpires, great, great moments, man. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Good stuff. We actually have the audio of the George Brett meltdown. Take a listen.
Now they're going to measure it across home plate.
Well, I've never seen this.
I never have either.
I don't know what they're measuring. They might be going to call George Brett out.
Well, he's out.
Yes, sir.
Brett is out. Look at this. Brett is out.
And he's steaming mad.
He is out and having to be forcibly restrained from hitting plate umpire Tim McClellan. And the Yankees have won the ball game 4-3. Brett is called out for using an illegal bat or with the illegal substance on the bat.
Crazy. Shout out MLB.com for the
Love
audio
that.
There. He is steaming mad.
He's steaming mad. Tim McClellan, the home plate umpire. And that was the third out in the inning, so that's how the game ended. Instead of a two-run homer, Royals now lead 5-4. That was out number three, game over.
So if there's like a tenth of an inch less of pine tar, it's fine. But because he exceeded this certain line,
right,
that's what gave him enough of an edge to put him over the top.
And I don't know what the advantage is when your hands aren't even that high on the bat. It's just your bat happens to have more pine tar.
I guess maybe you use some of it up on previous swings, so then you reach up to get more and come back down. That's all I can come up with.
I mean, your guess is as good as mine.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Joe Lo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Outstanding to have you with us today. Thank you for your time and continued support. Golden State Warriors owner Joe Lacob in studio in 29 minutes. He's going to hang out with us for an hour from 8:30 to 9:30. But for now, 35 years ago yesterday, this happened at the University of Indiana.
Two-shot technical against the bench and against Bob Knight. Steve Reed, an excellent free throw shooter, will have the honor of shooting the technicals.
Looky here. Bobby Knight just threw his chair clear across the free throw lane.
And I think Fred
Unbelievable.
Jones.
He picked up another tee.
How about that? Shout out ESPN for the audio. So that's where we're at. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time. Chilled Auto Body text line 95795 has one. Draymond versus KD. We went this far in the conversation, almost an hour, and that hadn't been mentioned. When you think about it, you probably have to consider that, don't you?
Yeah, and you would have to also consider Draymond versus LeBron James and the teabagging, not only for the incident, which is somewhat innocuous, but what took place after that fact. The fact that, you know, Draymond ends up getting suspended, the Warriors lose the NBA Finals and all that.
Oof. Brad in Corte Madera. Brad, welcome to the show. Thank you for the phone call. What do you got? Greatest sports meltdowns of all time.
Good morning, gentlemen. This pales in comparison to several that you've had, but the 1994 Olympics, when Tonya Harding totally lost it, started bawling because she couldn't tie her skates right.
Episodic break.
Oh, yes.
Like Oliver McCall. Absolutely. I thought when I saw Tonya Harding there, it was going to be the dude go after Nancy Kerrigan.
Jeff Galooly.
That's a bit of a meltdown.
Right.
You know what's wrong from that? Is that that's the lasting image and commentary people make. She got drilled with the crowbar. and you make fun of her.
Why, Amy?
Why are you making... Someone hit her across the leg, bro.
So you talk about how in this day and age you can do things like that, and yet all these years later, still jokes about assault.
It's funny because actually Keon and I, my 16-year-old son, we were talking disgrace at Chase over the weekend, and he's like, Dad, you know what you should do? You should go Tanya Harding on Lowe. So I was actually thinking about
Keon
having somebody roll into the studio during like the 9 o'clock hour when we stream and have somebody just bop you on the knee.
Keon, really?
It was a funny little vignette over the week. And I said, Keon, you're a damn genius,
well,
son.
I tell you what, you
chip off the old block.
You better tell them to bring their lunch pail. Better be more than one or more than two. Because they coming hip in here, and brother. I'm going to lay some holy hands, and I might have to put down my Holy Ghost for a while.
Yeah, but if you're not watching, you get caught from behind. That's it.
Yeah, and you tend to have your feet on the desk every now and again, so you get your feet up, and somebody comes in, pop!
I'm a prayer
And we're
you.
On to Cincinnati.
You don't strike me as someone who's all that vigilant.
No. He's a man of the cloth. And the Bible does say an eye for an eye, and I know right where you're going.
Yeah, he'll be coming back, but if it gets him out of the game, you would have to withdraw. Which would mean Dibs is the winner of the disgrace at Chase. If you were to take a shot to the knee and you could not continue. You could always try to sweep the leg.
Well, I could always play with one leg, Joe, and hop around on one.
Could you beat him with one leg?
It'd be a darn good game.
Such a reasonable answer. You were going to go full arrogance. You're like, you know what? Yeah, it'd be a good game.
It'd be a good game.
Now he's going to have a shot.
the Tanya Harding one, though, I don't know if you remember that happening because she broke. No, after that. So she works her way all the way back to where she's able to go to the Olympics. Then she broke her shoelace on her skate.
Did she continue to compete?
Well, I think she got suspended and then she came back.
That resulted in was a suspension?
Yeah, it wasn't because it took a long time to figure out whether or not she was actually responsible, remember?
I told you, Joe. What would think about now?
That feels like a lifetime ban and a jail sentence.
Yes, but that's why I'm
back
saying
then it was six months, you're out.
Right.
And then karma came back to bite her because she broke her, not the skate, but the shoelace on her skate. And so she wanted to get a restart because it wasn't fair. And she literally was sitting there bawling and she got a restart and
episodic,
she ended up taking ninth, I think.
These people that reach these points, especially Olympians, boxers, individuals who are in individual sports, everything about their life that they've put into it, all the work, all the focus, all the sacrifice, you can reach the highest possible point. But if you don't win and you have this immense feeling of failure, achieving something that no one else could even, that so many others couldn't even dream of achieving, but you get to a point where one little thing goes wrong and it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. Tiger Woods. Like Tiger Woods was not raised in what many would consider a normal way. It was an intense childhood. Where at a very young age, winning and succeeding and focus and discipline were instilled to the point where, you know, we root for Tiger Woods, but does anyone really look at Woods as like a normal guy? Like if you were to pick anyone on the PGA Tour to go have a beer with, the people that pick Tiger would be because, you know, Tiger's so awesome. But the reality is, does he seem like the type of guy you would want to get a beer with? He seems a little off. Like he had a really, it wasn't a normal childhood. And you can understand why it's a little bit
tense.
Different.
Yeah, a little tense all the time.
It just seems like if you doesn't win, you're a failure. And that's not the way of the world, but that's how he and a lot of other people see it. And that's why you have these moments where there are just these breaks. Where back in the day, like with Oliver McCall, it's like, oh, man, what happened? Now you realize it as it is an episodic break.
Right.
It is, you know, emotionally, you couldn't take anymore.
Tiger is just kind of a strange guy, socially awkward, certainly. And I remember reading that big piece that they wrote about his time with the Navy SEALs, and then they go out to lunch after one of the training days, and they're all, you know, enjoying Tiger, and at the end of the lunch, Tiger's like, so should we split the check 10 ways? And they're looking at Tiger like, come on, bro, you got to be able to pick this up. You got to be able to read the room, but socially just a little bit awkward.
Yeah, like not many people get to go train with the SEALs.
Right.
So the idea that they're going to welcome you in and show you that stuff, and then, yeah, of course, as cheap as possibly can be, famous stories about him and others. If you live in Vegas, you get to know cocktail waitresses. They become your friends. It's a small town. A lot of people know each other and you recognize each other and you see each other out. If you make friends with cocktail waitresses, you know all the dirty secrets. They're the ones who have waited on everybody. They know what they're all like. Woods is at the top of the list when it comes to no tipping. Nobody wanted to deal with that guy anyway. Him and Michael Jordan. Those were two guys where if they came in, you wanted nothing to deal with them that night because you knew you were going to be serving all night, working hard all night, trying to do the best possible job, and you would get nothing from them at the end of the
evening. No tip. Brutal.
Meanwhile, here comes Ben Affleck. I think he tipped out like $250,000 right before he went to rehab.
Wow.
He was having a huge run on the blackjack table. They said he had tipped out, six figures in tips. He was just handing out cash to everybody. And then the next day, Charlie Sheen went to Vegas to get him, to take him to rehab.
Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen. That's the amazing part of the story.
Wow.
Charlie Sheen, the voice of reason.
You know you're in a tough spot if Charlie Sheen's coming to bail you out like that.
If you're just having a good time living what you think is your life, and Charlie Sheen shows up and is like, bro, we got to talk.
Man.
Like, if you're not reasonable, the first thing out of my mouth is, Charlie Sheen, you just turn around and get the hell out of here. Why don't you go deal with your problems, Charlie Sheen? Bro, listen to me. I've been there. We know. You're probably there right now. 888-957-9570. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time is the topic of conversation coming off yesterday, which was the 35-year anniversary of Bobby Knight chucking that chair across the gym floor in a loss against the Purdue Boilermakers. Let's go with Renegade in Long Beach. Renegade, we always appreciate the call. What do you got?
Renegade, I always appreciate you. And I think that was Scottie Pippen that was a bad dipper, not Michael Jordan. Anyway, hey, listen, I want to take it all the way back, and I know some baseball teams think radio calls are outdated, but Bill King, 82, I had just returned back from Korea. Ed Rush had just made a horrible call against the Warriors, and it went a little something like this. No guts! No guts, Ed Rush! I told myself on the way to the arena tonight I wasn't going to say anything. That's the most gutless official in the history of the NBA. 25 years, bugaboo of the NBA. Ed Rush makes me sick. And I was just like, wow. I was mesmerized, and it made me remember all the great calls of Bill King, the time that he challenged the fans in Seattle. And once again, I think people forget, you know, you can see the action, but you're not really there. It's the broadcasters that make that action come to life. And if that thing was to happen to Jim Everett today and Chris Rome called, y'all would just hang up on him. Appreciate the time.
Nice, Renegade.
That's a good phone call right
there.
Nice,
Renegade.
888-957-9570. Today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, new compromises. Big Jose in San Jose. Big Jose, welcome to the show. Biggest sports meltdowns of all time. What do you got?
Call. Well, along the lines of Tyson Fury and McCall, Bear Robbins disappearing from the Super Bowl in 2002 for the Oakland Raiders, having mental issues and not remembering to take his meds. Couldn't even recognize his own teammates and coaches when they finally got him back. And then Al Davis was still trying to get him into the game. That's what I got.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, it looks like we have two categories. Well, we have several categories, but it looks like we have the categories of melting down due to something sports-related happening on the field and then having a meltdown more towards a mental health type issue. The Oliver McCalls, the right there with Barrett Robbins. I mean, that's an all-time story
when
you think about
it. Yeah, and you go back to that Super Bowl and you realize the Raiders, they had a good chance to beat Tampa. Tampa had a great defense. The way that game played out was such a motorboating, and we found out later that Tampa pretty much knew exactly what Oakland was going to run, but part of that was they didn't have their center. Barrett Robbins went AWOL, and so they had to shuffle the offensive line, and things were never going to be the same for the Raiders anyway.
Did you see the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders and the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders at the fight Saturday night?
I did see that.
They were there. They're going to be everywhere in Vegas. Get used to them. People are calling them stepbrothers, Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, stepbrothers out there at the fight.
Wow.
Did you see our former intern, old Mel? He got a picture with John Gruden in Vegas.
Mel was there. Mel had a lot of commentary as well via Twitter about what he thought was going to happen in the fight, what didn't happen in the fight, all that stuff. He's a huge boxing fan. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, Mel.
Yeah, Mel was there. He met...
Pretty good picture because Mel, Ryan Williams is his name, is 7 feet tall. And you see in the picture him next to Gruden. Gruden's all smiling and happy.
Teeth in or out?
The teeth was in.
Okay.
Old toothless Mel.
Did he get that tooth replaced?
No,
he's got the temporary.
Temporary. He just like taking them in and out. He's cool with it. I love Mel.
Is that going to be temporary forever, or is he going to get that done at some point?
That's a good question.
He's going to have a broadcast career. You're probably going to need to fix that tooth got knocked out playing basketball.
What the hell's going on, man?
Someone should reach out to Mel, see what he's thinking. Tell him we're talking about him today in drive time. He would love that. John, Daly City. John in Daly City, welcome to the show. Thanks for the phone call. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time. What do you got?
I got one for you. No, I'm disappointed you haven't mentioned this, but Ryan Leaf at the reporters after
Leaf, he melted down. That's when Junior Seau had to come in and save the day. Ryan Leaf went crazy.
What does that mean? What did Junior have to do?
Oh, he restrained him. Remember,
because Leaf kept getting.
Yeah, he was going after the reporter, and then they're going after the reporter, and then Big June grabbed him and held him back. before he wouldn't erupt even further. So yeah, that was a huge meltdown. Huge meltdown.
How many people back then liked Leaf more than Manning going into that draft?
Oh my God, everyone did.
I don't know about everyone.
Well, the majority. I mean, there was a huge. I did. I mean, Ryan
you thought Leaf would be better coming out of Washington State.
Washington
than
State. He was big.
He was
tall.
The prototype, right?
Oh my God, look
he,
how many
I
yards.
Mean, he's huge. He had a big Rose Bowl too.
Oh
if
my God,
memory serves me
he came to Fresno and threw dimes on us. I mean, we went down to it. We got in a shootout. I think they beat us 45-43.
Did you play against him?
Yeah,
were around the same age as Ryan Leaf.
It wasn't Leaf.
It was Bledsoe.
It was Bledsoe. But Leaf just, I seen
both Cougars.
Yeah. But Leaf lit it up. I mean, this guy you thought that was going to come in, just tear up the league. He was a big boy, could throw the ball, could throw everything. You thought that he was going to be a lot better than what he, well, a lot better. Everyone did that.
Yeah.
But he was really, drugs, a hell of a drug. You know, it can really, really twist you up, unfortunately.
Drugs is a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
That's a new one right there.
Yeah.
Come back from every commercial with that.
Drafted in 1998. So, a little bit after your time. But I remember watching him at Washington State and thinking this guy has to be the first overall pick. Even with the Manning pedigree aside, like Lo was saying, this is the guy that he was the absolute prototype.
Yeah, how many Rose Bowls was Washington State playing in? Like, if Washington State ever made a Rose Bowl, and that's back when, you know, you as the Pac-12 champ, Pac-10 champ, whatever it was back then.
It meant something.
The only thing you had was the Rose Bowl. You were at the sole discretion of however the voters placed you. So getting to the Rose Bowl was huge. Still huge, but back then, that was your track.
Oh, yeah.
So if you were there, that meant big things. They used to go five wide on that offense. I mean, you had to figure, and Manning couldn't win the big one.
Right.
That was the knock against him in college. He could not beat the Gators. He was 0-4 against Florida.
And everyone was saying that the reason why Manning would go is because of his name. But everyone thought that Leaf was a better quarterback, thought that he'd
Jeez.
Be. That was the majority. Oh, he's just going to go if he does over Leaf is because of his last name.
Well, you know what? For Ryan Leaf, it turned nicely. It turned nicely. He hit rock bottom, figured out his way back, and now he's broadcasting.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot of public speaking. He's trying to help the youth. So
good for him.
Working his way back. Let's go to the Meta. Sean in Alameda. Sean, thank you for the phone call. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time. What do you got?
I actually have two, but the first one didn't get media attention. I think the Warriors, when they had Chris Mills, they fought with the Blazers. Apparently, there's a story where he went after them with a bat in the team bus. Do you guys remember that?
I don't remember that.
I do not, but it sounds like an interesting story.
He went after, I think, Bonzi Wells.
Makes more sense now. What was the other one?
Joey Crawford ejecting Tim Duncan for laughing at him.
Wow, it's pretty good.
No one's mentioned either of those today. We'll have to do more research on the Mills one, but the Duncan one to all time. Because
yeah.
Duncan's just sitting there doing it. That's Duncan's lone ejection, is it not?
Yeah, and Joey Crawford had it out for Tim Duncan, so to speak. When the caller mentioned Chris Mills, it had me think immediately of the Latrell Sprewell, PJ Carlissimo meltdown, where he comes back after the argument. Steiny tells a great story. He's actually the one who broke that story when he was covering the Warriors. And when he comes back, Latrell comes back to the court and chokes PJ Carlissimo. That's one of the classic meltdowns.
Yeah, you'd have to put that one on the list for sure. JC and Tracy. JC, thank you for the phone call. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time. What do you got?
Hey, what's up, fellas? So I got two things. A story about Michael Jordan and a meltdown. But for the meltdown first, this gets me every single time I watch it on TV, is the minor league coach from the Braves where he just throws the rosin bag like it's a grenade and starts crawling behind the mound, taking second base off and just keeps going for like 15 minutes. Like, that's got to be one of the greatest ever.
No doubt. What's the story on Jordan?
So, Joe, so since you're from Vegas, I'm pretty sure you know where the Rhino is, right?
Yeah, I've heard of the Spearmint Rhino. I'm not exactly sure where it's located, but I've heard of it.
Okay, right. So the Spearmint Rhino, you know, Gentleman's Club. My cousin works as a manager. My cousin works there as a manager. So Gretzky and Jordan are there with a couple other friends, but they're the two main guys. So they got there. They're there all night, I guess, with the girls and doing their thing. And when they're about to leave, like my cousin says, like, you know, these are obviously the stories from the girls that are right there because he's in charge of the girls, so he's telling them the stories. So Gretzky's reaching his pocket, and, you know, he's like, oh, let's tip these girls, you know, let's leave a tip. And they say that Jordan stops Gretzky, holds his hand. He's like, oh, us being here is a good enough tip, and doesn't leave anything.
Wow.
Appreciate the phone call. Now, again, no idea whether or not that's true. That's a story. But there are a lot of those that float around Vegas. There are the dudes that, you know, everyone loves because they come in. They're a good time. They don't cause any trouble. They're fun to be around. They tip well. And then there are a lot of guys that don't. Woods is one of the guys that doesn't tip. Jordan. There are a few guys that live there that you see everywhere. Oral Hershiser. You see him. He plays a lot of poker at the Red Rock, from what I understand. Andre Agassi, who's beloved in that town. And the third one is, I'm blanking. Vince Neil from Motley Crue. Vince Neil is always dead center in the VIP tables, football Sundays at the Red Rock. I remember you'd always see him. He'd be there in a Dolphins jersey. It's just the oddest thing.
Crazy.
It's Vince Neil with his glasses, his Dolphins jersey, 3-4 women who are all having a nice time. Champagne keeps flowing. He's just sitting there, you know, watching his football like the rest of us, just enjoying games. Probably playing 10-team parlays like the rest of us.
And I'll look for him. I'll be at the Red Rock here in about 3.5 weeks. So just in case Vince happens to be floating around with March Madness coming up.
Are you staying at the Red Rock?
Yeah, staying at the Red Rock, yeah.
So you're going to do probably all your work there, or are you going to migrate out a little
bit? I'll probably get over to the Sun Coast and hang out with some of the finer, older gentlemen in Vegas. Average age in the coast is about 88. You go in the sports book and you sit there, it's dead quiet. You got older guys just reading the sports page.
It's a tough bingo game to crack.
Yeah, it's real tough.
Yeah, a tough bingo game.
The blue
over there.
Plate special, though, is awesome.
Shoot over to Ellis Island and tell them I sent you.
I will. You know? I will. If I make it down there to the strip down there on Koval, right. I'll definitely get over to the island.
You're not going to make it down there.
I do spend one day at the strip, but we usually go to the Link, which is right across from Caesars. But if times are tough, I absolutely will go out right down there to old Ellis Island. Koval.
You should get an endorsement. They should have your head out there like George Wallace. George Wallace, you know, you see his billboards everywhere. Tell him old Lo Neal sent you.
So great.
All these people walking in the door at Ellis Island, these Titan fans and Charger fans. Lo Neal sent me. Man, what the hell is going on around here? Who in the hell is this Lo Neal? Is it Ramel in Fremont? Ramel, thank you for the phone call. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time.
Yes, I'm going old school, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Woody Hayes, his meltdown when he punched that lineman when they intercepted the ball to end the game. Unfortunately, the legendary coach last game.
Yeah, the old Gator Bowl.
You brought that one up earlier.
Yeah, against Clemson in the Gator Bowl. Closing moments, his quarterback throws an interception, and the Clemson kid spills into him, and inexplicably, as the kid's getting up, he grabs him and just goes, boom, straight uppercut. The
Man.
Coach... uppercutting a player on the opposing team, and of course, mayhem breaks out from there. It was wild.
You think it was a meaningful football game, the Gator Bowl?
Well, back then there was only like 10 or 11 bowl games.
True.
It wasn't like nowadays where there's, you know,
100.
36 bowl games or whatever.
People on Twitter sending us everything. I got Rory McIlroy throwing an iron into a pond at Doral. That's the classic golf meltdown. It's either the breaking of the club
right.
or the chucking of the club. I broke so many 56-degree wedges in my day from the sand trap, just smashed over the knee. And then you go right back to the same golf store.
Yeah, right.
Let me get a look at that Cleveland 56-degree.
Right.
What
right.
happened to the last one? You know,
lost
long
it.
Story. Sean in San Francisco. Sean, thank you for the phone call. Welcome to the show. Greatest sports meltdowns of all time. What do you got?
So Sprewell came to work and he wasn't moving fast enough for P.J. Kalissima. And P.J. was giving him a lot of crap and Sprewell choked him. That was a good one.
We forgot about Spree.
Thank
we
you, Sean.
We forgot about
Tim's brought it up a little while ago because we had someone call in on it. But how does the world react if that happens now?
It's just, I mean, chaos. It's probably a lawsuit. It's probably maybe jail time for Sprewell. In this era
he'd be banned from basketball. Exactly.
I mean, we all react and overreact to everything. What about this one, Joe? 2000 World Series. Mike Piazza's at the plate. Broken bat. Comebacker. The bat flies near Roger Clemens, who picks up the bat and throws it at Mike Piazza.
That was in the World Series that
yeah,
happened?
Yeah, it was the New York versus New York World Series, Game 2.
That's back when they used to cut the outfield with the different designs. And the whenever they did it at the Met Stadium, they had the New York skyline going across the outfield when they used to get real creative with outfield grass designs with the way they mowed it. That was always such an insane thing. Clemens hated him so much for some reason.
Yeah.
So much. To grab that bat and then chuck it back. And all time, you know what? Piazza not doing anything about that. That didn't look good either.
No.
A guy's gonna chuck your bat back at you and you're not going to do anything about
it? Right.
He should have gone out there and, well, you can't advocate that anymore. So there's that. People bringing up John Rocker the meltdown.
Oh,
Rocker,
yeah.
The closer for the Braves was like this red-hot closer
yeah.
who was just came out of nowhere and all of a sudden was a superstar, then does an interview with Sports Illustrated where he goes on these racist, homophobic rants. It ends up being like the story of all stories that Sports Illustrated had gotten because it effectively sinks Rocker. Rocker's talking about being on the New York subway and what you're next to and who you have to see and how awful it is.
Right.
And he just goes off. And that, I mean, I don't think he was done with baseball after that, but in terms of having a chance at being a star ever again, he was effectively
right.
done.
Dibs, we forgot about old Papa John, his little meltdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
He just likes to get drunk. Papa John likes to. Papa John's been talking about a comeback. He's talking about he's going to be rising from the ashes. They ran him out, but he says he's coming back. I don't know. It's cryptic, but that guy, A, likes to sweat, and B, likes to drink.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days.
Yeah. That was just recently, right? He's doing all these pizza taste testings. He's getting ready to come back.
He has no pizza experience.
I don't know why Steven has that audio so readily available.
Because it's
He's
nuts.
Never been in the pizza category.
It's nuts. It's nuts. First of all, there's got to be a non-compete. You can't start Papa John's, then go public, then get run, and then be like, I'm just going to start another pizza shop. It's like, that's not how this works.
Right.
Stay tuned. Non-compete.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
That'd be an all-time comeback story for you, though. You put Papa John up there with, I'm trying to think of the other great comeback stories. That's probably another one for another day. Man. All right, few things. The disgrace at Chase, Wednesday, February 26th. Take a listen to this.
Hi, this is Marv Albert. On a clear and unusually warm February day in San Francisco, we prepare for the much-anticipated and highly pontificated disgrace at Chase, featuring Dibs against Lowe, and Lowe is precisely where the bar is set for this battle between two gentlemen who are, shall I say, past their prime. Wednesday, February 26th at Chase Center. Don't miss it. Someone's bound to win. Yes.
Marv Albert, thank you to Warriors Prince of PR Raymond Ritter for talking to Marv Albert to get us that. Apparently he procured it late last week. Shot it over. We're going to turn it into some promos. That's Marv Albert talking about the disgrace.
It's just, it's incredible. I've heard it now four or five times, and it just doesn't get old. The idea that somebody who has that level of gravitas, low, as you like to say, somebody who's the king in their field, that they would take time out of their day to cut that for this Low versus Dibs one-on-one. I'm flabbergasted at how cool that is.
It's simply amazing. I mean, it's legendary. Think about it. You play games and you hear different things about whether it's Drew Brees or Peyton Manning, all those different things. You hear guys making cuts, you know, about the games coming up. But think about it, we're getting ready to play a game and you get Marv going to come on to do that for us. And you see Monday Night Football, they got all the different. These guys, this is what they get paid to do.
Right.
So you think about the gravity of that, to saying, hey, I'm going to do this for you. That's awesome, Joe, that this guy was able to go out and say, you know, you get someone to be able to say, well, do this for me. I mean,
hey, Beyonce, would you mind calling my kid
exactly,
and singing happy birthday to her?
That's pretty much what that is.
Basically the same level of awesome.
Marv, at the end of it, probably just looking down, thinking to himself, that's it for me. This is where I'm at now. Promos for the disgrace at Chase. I'm not sure there's another level left to the game. All right. Plenty to get to. As we said, today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. Continue to hit us up. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Here we go. Warriors owner Joe Lacob, kind enough to come into the studio. He's going to hang out with us for about an hour. We're going to have that for you next. But first, what's coming up in the game? Brought to you by Whole Foods Market.
Now back to Joe Low and Dibs.
Well, think about it.
I don't understand it.
On 95.7, The Game.
Here's what gives. Golden State Warriors owner Joe Lacob, kind enough to join us in studio for the next hour. So we're going live on the stream. Mr. Lacob, you look fantastic. I'll start with that.
I'm not sure how to take that.
We'll do a little buttering here early on, set the stage for a nice, pleasant interview. But thank you so much for coming in. I know you're a busy guy, so it means a lot to us. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I normally get up twice a week early to go play basketball in my games. So, but when it's not for basketball, it's just a little harder, you know, because, you know, that's what you get up for, to play. But to come up and talk to you guys, I mean, I don't know. It just wasn't quite the same.
Not
but
the same.
I'm still excited to be here. But
so twice a week you get up and get it in?
I do. Really? I've been doing it for decades.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. 6:45 on the court.
5-on-5, four court.
Yeah.
See, that's real basketball.
Absolutely.
Wednesday, very different than that. They were arguing as to how far they're going to take the ball back out for their one-on-one. The free throw line was apparently too far.
Yeah, too far.
You're running up and down the court for how long do you guys play for?
It's about an hour and 20. Hour and 15, hour and 20.
That's good exercise right there.
Wow. Yeah.
Actually, it's pretty, if you love basketball and it's in your blood when you started when you're young, it's just, it's hard to get any, the same excitement or adrenaline from any other workout. So I love doing it.
What time do you get up when you're not getting up to play basketball? Guy like you, what time you wake up?
You know, I used to be an early riser kind of guy. Now, it depends. I mean, for basketball, for golf, or something like that, I'll get up early. Otherwise, like meetings at Chase Center with Raymond, I'm not doing that until like 9:30 or 10.
All right, there you go. I can't say I blame you. That's what you've been doing. You got to call your own shots. It's a beautiful thing.
You tell Raymond, do not start a meeting before 9. If you are, it's you on your own, right?
Yeah, not coming in too early.
Exactly. Your love of basketball, where did it first start? Just take us down memory lane. When did you fall in love and say, you know what, I love this game?
I was 9 years old.
Sure.
I lived in New Bedford, Massachusetts, which I don't know if you know much about. There's not much. And I'll never forget. I played, you know, as a kid, baseball was my major thing. But I never forget, played basketball on the hardtop a little bit. I was a little kid. And I went to a boys club. Mm-hmm. And I've told this story many times. First time I'd ever seen an indoor court, the hardwood. Wow. And I just, I remember like it was yesterday, which is a long time ago, that just love of, it was so exciting to me for some reason. It still is. Whenever I walk into a gym, especially if it's a gym I haven't seen, right, I see the hardwood floor and I get all excited. And in fact, in my life, I have now built 3 basketball courts. Wow. I've got like this sort of weird thing going on about this. 2 of them were at houses, believe it or not. And one of them was at 8,000 feet up in the mountains. I had a ski house. And below the house, so 35 foot below the house, had a court. We used to play after skiing all day, 8 hours. We'd go play basketball at 8,000 feet at 4 p.m. with the other kids around there. But and the third one, of course, is the most expensive.
Yeah.
That being Chase Center.
We've heard of that one.
Nice little gym you got there.
1 millionth fan came through last night. 1 millionth customer, client. What's the official word we're using? The 1 millionth?
Yes. Yeah, guest. That's a good word.
1 millionth guest. That's the word I'm looking for. 1 millionth guest. Did this guy know he was the millionth guest?
I don't know if he did or not. He did know. Okay. Raymond says the truth is they did know.
So he comes out the highlight last night. It's not just walking through and, hey, here's a handshake. And
he didn't know what was going to happen, probably.
This guy got a huge response last night.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I was out there and, you know, it's hard to believe 1 million guests so quickly. It's our first year.
Right.
But it was pretty exciting. Everyone was all around there waiting because they didn't know if it was some celebrity coming through or whatever. It was really nice. We gave him 2 floor seats. I didn't talk to him after, but I'm sure he had a good time. And it was a pretty nice, you know, feeling for us.
Now that you've had this open for a year and you are able to look at it, how remarkable is it as compared to what you envisioned it to be? Because we've all been there in a variety of capacities, and it truly is an incredible arena. But this is something that you saw literally from the first shovel in the ground to now what it is. Has it met all your expectations?
You know, it's not really just even that short period of time. I've loved basketball for 50 some odd years now.
Right.
And I don't know what it is, but the idea of building the perfect basketball arena has always been something that is in the back of my mind would be the most exciting, interesting things to do. Not just owning a team or playing or all these other things. I love the idea of that. When I was a kid, I used to go to the old Boston Garden. Yeah. And it was bad in many ways, but I didn't know. And it was just so unique. I love the uniqueness of sports facilities. So, you know, when you go to some new arena or a new stadium and it's sort of, it's like all the others, not so exciting. When you go to a place that's pure, that's exciting. And I kind of hope, and I think that we did that here. We achieved something that's pure for basketball. Obviously very good for concerts as well, acoustics and so on. But the idea that it's pure, that it's not some giant, and I don't want to put down other arenas per se, but some of them are multi-purpose, hockey. They're very large. They're really big and cavernous, maybe down in Southern California.
I know a place like that.
We wanted something pure. Yeah. And I really feel that our place, when you walk in there, not only is it high-end and nice and meets modern-day requirements for what our fans expect, especially fans in the Bay Area, in terms of services and so on, and how they're taken care of, but it's intimate. I hope you guys feel that way when you walk in there. It's intimate, and it's got a specialness to it that it's just unlike any other place. And so I think we're really proud of it. We're really happy with the way it's gone. We're not happy with the year on the court that's happened at the same time, but we're going to rectify that.
Warriors owner Joe Lacob joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Mr. Lacob, you talked about earlier this 9-year-old kid that was on a first time entering into a hardwood floor court and talking about just the maturation of how where you are today. When did you think that, man, is this possible for me to own a team? What was the possibility? When did those stages of, you know, kind of your life where you're like, man, this is becoming more of reality where you wanted to be like you are today?
You have to dream.
Yeah.
Right. You have to dream. And I've always been a dreamer. In fact, I got in trouble when I was a little kid. And I've never told this, actually, but in school, third grade or whatever, and the teacher, fourth grade, they'd come and say to my parents, you know, he's off in some other world sometimes. Dreaming, daydreaming. Maybe I was a little bored in the class. I don't know. I was a good student. But I guess the thing is, I've always sort of been a dreamer, thought everything was possible. I was grew up in a relatively poor environment, I guess you could say, a tough neighborhood. Had nothing. I was first person to go to college in my family. So I probably had no right to dream some of those dreams, but I did. And when did I first think I'd really make that dream come true, I think is your question. Probably when I was in my 30s, I kind of realized I was doing pretty well in my first life of business, which was venture capital and technology, and enjoying it as well. But I knew that it wasn't ultimately fulfilling to me, ultimately, because I had this sort of passion inside me that this is what I wanted to do, was to own an NBA team someday. It's just something I've always loved. And so, you know, once I decided it was possible, there was no stopping it.
Wow.
What's that like the first time? Because I'm never going to know this feeling. That first time you say to yourself, I want to buy a basketball team, and it's not a farce. Like, it's actually something you can think about doing.
Yeah,
like,
I
want to buy a basketball team. Like, I'm going to want to have lunch today. So at some point, I'm going to go, I want to have lunch.
Well, those that know me, this is a funny story, but if you were to talk to friends of mine, they would tell you that they thought I was a little crazy, because even when I was younger, early 20s, 30s, that's what I used to talk about. Say, someday, that's what I want to do. They'd hear me say that and say, that's a weird thing for some tech guy to say. But that's kind of always what I've wanted to do. And
spoke it. Wow.
And so sometimes when you think about something for long enough, you dream about something for long enough, you work hard all your life, you know, good things can happen. It is America. And, you know, I was able to do it, fortunately, obviously. And I started looking really in my 40s. You know, this was a 10-year process. I almost bought several other teams. Probably wasn't quite ready to do that, but I was already starting the process and got a lot of experience with what it takes to be an owner. And when the perfect one came along, which was in my now home for, I don't know, almost 40 years, where my kids have grown up, and it was NBA, and the Warriors I'd become a fan of, going to all those games for years and years and years, and, you know, a lot of losing being absorbed, obviously, but but it was still exciting for me. And the idea, actually, I love the idea that we could turn something around almost more than buying something that was already sort of great at the time. That was sort of part of the process of the fun of it all, right?
No question. And when you're thinking about that, what about all the dream killers that you probably have encountered? What kept you going? What was the driving force? Because, you know, in life, you see so many people that tell you, you can't. What was one of those driving forces that you said, you know what, I believe?
I don't know. I don't have a specific one. You know, honestly, I've always believed I can do whatever I wanted to do. I mean, you can call it a little confident. Some would use other words, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm a very linear guy. I mean, I get an idea of something and I'm going to do it no matter what. So that's just the way I've been, no matter what I was doing.
No matter the naysayers.
Starting companies, going to school, getting into the certain school. I mean, I've just always been very, very driven to the extent that I even, I don't think I really enjoyed people say, what's your best decade? You know, and I'm in my 60s now, so it wasn't my 20s because I don't remember anything. It was all work. I was working all the time. I was so focused on work. I mean, I probably could have had a lot more fun, drank more and done whatever what kids do. But that wasn't me. You know, I was just a very driven kind of person towards these kind of big end goals. And I really don't believe there's anything that I can't do if I set my mind to it, or at least try. And, so that's just who I am. I'm always looking forward. I've said this before. I do not like the idea of looking back. I don't like looking at the past. Yes, it's fun to smell the roses every now and then. Sure, I understand. Sure. But for a minute or two. Otherwise, you're all caught up in your own ego and your own whatever. That's not what it's about. It's about getting there. It's about the process of working hard, going through all the systematic approach to try to get to your goals. And then when you get there, you know, that's cool when you're there. But actually, the fun part's getting there.
Wow. Fast forward when you you got the team. You own the team. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about the losing. What was some of those driving forces? What was the pieces you said, how can I change this team? From you bought it now you own it. It wasn't necessarily a championship team. What was that process of the diligence?
Are you thinking about buying a team?
I'm always people that have accomplished things. It just always
this is free consultation.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, by the way, I just want to say something. No, I'll answer this question, but I want to say something. Walking in here today, I told Raymond. I said, you know, I like going on this show, but there are a couple other shows I want to do too. Because these guys, they're just all about having fun in the morning. It's all chipper and fun, and I'm a little more intense than that. And he looked at me, laughed, you know. So I love this. This is great. I love this. We're on to some really cool stuff here.
Yeah.
We put the foolishness aside for one day.
Yeah, no joking around on this program.
All business. Change of perception, what you think
yeah,
about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. What was the question?
Yeah, good of a question. Huh? Wow. No, but fast forward. You accomplish what your dream. You own a team.
Yep.
Then what went into it to get it to where it's at, to win? What was some of the pieces that you knew that you in order to change the perception of the Warriors who they were?
So this is an interesting question, actually. I had thought about doing this for so long. That I had a lot of ideas about it, right or wrong.
Right.
And it wasn't like I came into this like, you know, say, oh, at 65 years old or something, I said, I'm also buy a team. I got so much money. I can do whatever. I mean, that's what some people do, I'm sure. It's a little bit of a, and I'm not pointing out any names, but they haven't prepared for it their whole life. I've been thinking about this forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, dreaming about it forever. And watch a student of the game. I would like to think a student of the business of basketball and business of sports. And, you know, even when I was in venture capital, I was starting internet sports companies back when it first started. And CBS Sports Line was a company I started. And so I've been thinking about it for a long time and watching basketball. And, you know, we all, when you want to become an owner, I could do it better. That's the natural attitude, right? I could do it better than the next guy. And I certainly had that hope and desire and thought that I could as well. So, I mean, I thought about it for a long time about what kind of a culture I would have, how teams play together, style of play. All those things were not like think of later. Those were things I thought about before. Mm. Now, we were very lucky. I was incredibly lucky. We were lucky, all of us. In fact, the whole Bay Area is lucky that Steph Curry was on this team when we bought the team. He was a rookie. He was a very different player. But you have to have a little luck in life. And you have to recognize when you have a little luck in life. You know, the fact that we had Steph Curry and that we could base not just a style of play, but a culture around an individual that is so amazing, in my view, like unbelievably unique. And I think that was helpful. But all of the things you're talking about doing, you know, we'd thought about, and I'd met Peter Gruber a number of years ago, who's a, you know, tremendous guy. He had all the skills that I recognized that I didn't really have, which is entertainment. And that part of sports, you know, I'm more about the basketball and about the arena and maybe the style of play and the culture of the team and hiring, you know, and running an organization is something that I'm good at. I've been a CEO a number of times and built up all these companies. So all the things I have, but Peter had the whole entertainment aspect of it all. And so it was I knew I needed a partner, someone that was great at providing those missing pieces to the overall view of what we wanted to accomplish. So when we did it, make a long story short, I think we had a pretty good idea of where we wanted to be a decade later, which I guess we are a decade later now.
How about it?
You know, we built a team the style of play we won. We had to get lucky along the way. It was great. And then we built an arena, and that took 7 years, and that was a lot of work. And now we're thinking about what we're going to do for phase two.
Warriors owner Joe Lacob with Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Let's talk about phase two. The thought process going into finishing off this season and then getting ready for next season. Obviously, the landscape of the NBA has changed a little bit. You've got Kawhi Leonard with the Clippers and all that stuff you guys will be contending with next season. But let's start with the obvious. Steph looks like he's set to come back at the beginning of March. The organization's got to be excited about this. The Wizards would be the first game. It looks like five of the first six, if he hits that target date, would be at home. So that's the perfect landing for Steph. You'd have to figure, get him out at Chase Center and then work from there. Do you guys still envision that as the plan? Him coming back March? Is everything going according to plan, I guess, is what the fans probably want to know.
I think it's on plan, but we won't know until, you know, the doctors and Steph give the okay. That's the target date. Looks good, but I can't say for sure. I mean, we're not going to do anything that would in any way potentially harm him or, you know, cause a setback. So that's the goal. Hopefully he does. And I think the whole Bay Area will be excited to see Steph Curry play again.
What's the thought process like right now that's been going on this year going into the upcoming offseason in terms of how you want to reshape the club? I know there's a lot you can't talk about, and that's fine, but I would imagine that this is almost like embarking on the challenge from the first time when you bought the Warriors and you came in. There's a lot of moving parts. And again, the landscape of the West has changed a little bit. So, I mean, the blueprint from now until the offseason, how do you compare it to other offseasons, for example?
Really fun for me, you know, for us. Because remember what I said, it's about the process, right? And so we knew that at some point you're not going to go to every final, right, and to win every championship. That's just not going to happen. What we did was almost unprecedented, the Celtics.
Sure.
And I would argue, honestly, as great as I loved the Celtics when I was a kid, the 60s, what were there, eight teams?
Right.
I mean, it's a lot harder now. And the athletes are just, it's just different.
There wasn't as much player movement either.
Yeah, I think it's a lot harder to do what we did than they did. And I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying it's a different era. So I think we knew it would end at some point. Now, you never know how it's going to happen. It's sports. People get injured. Mm-hmm. We had two horrific injuries in, two consecutive games. Then Durant decides to leave, and so Clay gone, and then Steph gets hurt in game four. I mean, you know, things happen. It's sports, guys. And so we had to accelerate our thinking this year and do a whole lot of work. We've been working really hard about how we're going to create this next phase. We have the tremendous fortune of having Steph at early 30s, 32. 31, not even 32 yet. He'll be 32 in March. You got Clay and Draymond, who are basically 30-year-olds. They've still got some time left here, guys. Right. They're in their prime. So that's a great thing. So I think our plan this year was to figure out how can we use this year, not that we're going to lose. We certainly didn't want to lose. But if, you know, stuff happens, if we're losing, how do we accelerate things? How do we take a look at a lot of young players? How do we see what fits for next year in the whole puzzle? We've got this great core to build around. We've got to replace that three position. We think we have done it now. We started that process last summer. Basically for Kevin Durant, who left on his own accord. I wish he didn't, but he did. We wound up with a really good positional fit in Wiggins, and wound up with a first and second round pick that could be very, very attractive picks. Right. I mean, to get that for a guy that was leaving for nothing, and we could have had nothing. So I think that was good. We're spending a lot of time on the draft. We're going to have a high pick this year. Likely have a good pick, a really good pick next year. That's going to help. We haven't had a draft pick higher than number 7, Harrison Barnes,
right,
in the entire tenure of my running this organization. In fact, that Clay was our first pick, our first time we had a draft pick, which was at number 11 in 2011. We just haven't had high picks. It's hard in the NBA. It's hard enough even if you're in the top 10,
right?
Because there's a certain amount of randomness to this. It's just not automatic.
Right.
Who do you send there to be the individual for the lottery? Every team's get real used to it because they're there every year.
Oh, that's a social question. That's a different question.
Yeah, it's a big question.
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't decided that yet, but we've got some interesting ideas.
But you've thought about it.
Oh, yes.
He's thought about everything. Absolutely.
I was going to say.
It's not going to be Raymond.
We'd like to offer
it. It's not going to be Raymond. You're not on my list. I'm sorry. You deserve it maybe, but...
Lorenzo Neal is a great ambassador in case you need to think outside the box. He would be a great representative.
We've got some outside-the-box picks. Lorenzo, I think you're great. 16 years in the NFL, but it's not going to make the cut.
He has thought about this. I love that.
Oh, yeah. We've got some very interesting ideas.
All right.
Okay. And I don't want to blow it.
No, that's fine.
They're actually really fun.
Don't blow it.
Some are four-legged animals. I don't know.
They look at us differently here in the Bay Area. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Warriors owner Joe Lacob with us here on 95.7 The Game.
It used to be an annual pilgrimage to Secaucus, and this is the first time. And I've been a Warrior fan for almost 50 years, and the draft lottery was always the biggest
event. I think it's in Chicago this year.
Oh, no more Secaucus.
Well, no, they changed
it. That's good for the representation.
Shorter flight.
What do you think of the fan base who's been so loyal and so good this year, not only making the trip over from the East Bay, but being a part of what we have been calling basically a gap year? How good has the fan base been?
I think our fan base is unbelievable. We are so lucky. I mean, let's be honest here, guys. We moved an arena across the bay. It's only 8 miles. It's not that far. Having said that, for some people, it's a big deal. And we moved it. We retained 70% of our ticket holders, which I think is
awesome.
Pretty darn good. And we got some new ones as well, which we're really happy about. It's been a really tough first year. This is what you don't want to happen in a new arena, although it is better than happening the year before, from my perspective.
Right.
but I think it's been an incredible year. And here we are. We have 12, almost an historically bad year for us, for a lot of reasons, I would argue, that are out of our control. But 12 wins. Not good. We're the worst team in the NBA right now. I never thought I'd be able to say that, but we are there. And our fans, you go to the game last night, and now I know it was Zion, but the place was packed. It had an electricity to it. We have incredible fans. I can't tell you how many people come up to me all the time and are so positive this year,
right.
All the time, so nice. And that is definitely better than being booed, which I was in the past. Okay. And maybe we earned it to some extent, but they have been great. And I really appreciate our fans so much. The fact that they've been so loyal to our team and think that we, you know, deliver a good game, a good arena, and hopefully a good product again next year.
All right. Hold that thought.
Yep.
Warriors owner Joe Lacob in studio with Joe Low and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Shoot your questions to the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side, back in a flash here on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.